Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am Ursula Rudenberg, your host for today. Thank you for listening in. I'm feeling some trepidation about giving weather predictions since last week I said there was going to be snow coming our way, and I did not see anything like that. However, I'm going to take a chance on the U.S. Weather Service again and say this. What we see for the coming week is pretty much sun during the days and clouds and stars at night and the moon. Temperatures during the day will be in the 50s with especially warm day on Wednesday and next Saturday. And nights will drop down into the 30s, but not below freezing. So I guess I have to stop going out to walk across the ice covering Peterson's Pit, which is one of my guilty winter pleasures. Walking on water. There's not much more to say. According to the Weather Service, March is coming in like a lamb, at least during the first week. We'll see what happens next week. I invented a new Local Talk segment this week that I'm going to try out on you. I call it Received and Noted. Every week, KHOI gets a lot of news releases and announcements via our email account. And Received and Notice is an unedited and random selection of what was sent to us this week. If they took the trouble to write to us, it goes on the air. So here goes. edreferral.com is the website for the Eating Disorder Referral and Information Center. On the website, you'll find information about current research and news, treatment centers, books, and book reviews. And even the story of how Taylor Swift overcame her struggle with eating her eating disorder. Former presidential candidate John Delaney published an op-ed in Washington Post called How to Know When It's Time to Quit. He outlines criteria for deciding when to step out of the presidential race and says he has no regrets about doing so prior to the Iowa caucuses. He writes, I urge some candidates to exit so they don't prevent pragmatic candidates from being our nominee. It's not about you. And apparently Tom Steyer and Pete Buttigieg got that message this last weekend and took it to heart. Excuse me. The ISU Extension and Outreach Service offers a full menu of educational programs ranging from livestock care to crops to management issues like risk management, almost every week that can be seen at extensioniastate.edu. Iowa Senator Joni Ernst reports that she's pleased with the president's comments on lowering health care costs, which he gave during a State of the Union address, including prescription drug costs. In regards to H.R. 3, the bill approved in the U.S. House that establishes programs to attack the high cost of prescription bills and is yet to be approved in the Senate, Ernst said that H.R. 3 is not the do-all, be-all, and end-all that we're working through, and we're working through some of the issues. I imagine by the end of this we'll come up with a plan that will be supported broadly in a bipartisan manner because this is a bipartisan issue. Also, as a member of the pro-life caucus in the U.S. Senate, Ernst joined fellow caucus members on the Senate floor to support two bills for which she voted. They were S-311, stating that if abortion results in the live birth of an infant, the infant is a legal person for all purposes under the laws of the United States and entitled to the protections that would arise from any newborn or any person who comes to a hospital clinic or facility for screening or treatment. H.R. 36 is the other bill she supported. This amends the federal crime code to make it a crime for any person to perform or attempt to perform an abortion if the probable post-fertilization age of the fetus is 20 weeks or more. The bill provides exceptions for an abortion if that is necessary to save the life of the pregnant woman, or when the pregnancy is the result of rape or incest. The Iowa Department of Cultural Affairs will hold its biannual Iowa Arts Summit on August 7th at the FFA Enrichment Center in Ankeny. This is the state's leading professional development and networking event for Iowa artists, filmmakers, nonprofit professionals, and community leaders. There are some upcoming dates in regard to this. Awards are being presented at the Iowa Arts Summit for the Governor's Award, and you can make nominations for these awards to gain recognition for Iowa artists, art teams, nonprofit organizations, cities, and counties that have made a difference in the arts in Iowa. You must make your nomination by May 1st, so that gives you a little bit of time to think about it or bring it to your group, such as a board of directors or boss, to make a nomination. Also, our own Iowa Arts fellow Jennifer Drinkwater in Ames here has written a guide to community mural painting, which has been published by Iowa State University Extension and Outreach, telling you how to make murals, community murals, and how community art can build stronger communities. In Nevada, Lucy Martin, who is Story County's Auditor and Commissioner of Elections, announced that the filing period for candidates in the upcoming primary and general elections in Story County begins today, March 2nd. Partisan county candidates have until March 25th to file for these seats. One seat on the County Board of Supervisors, Auditor, Sheriff, or County Attorney. There are a host of other deadlines for candidates to file for various public positions. To get the full schedule, go to storycountyiowa.gov and check out the county auditor's page. So if you're interested in running for office, go make sure that you meet your deadlines. The ISU Pest Management News announces that Iowa State University Extension and Outreach offers two-hour classes for anyone interested in being certified to sell morel and oyster mushrooms within the state of Iowa. The workshops will be held on Saturday, March 21st and April 4th. This is a certification workshop that covers identifying true morels and distinguishing them from false morels, as well as oyster mushrooms. And there's a permit needed to legally sell these mushrooms in Iowa. You can meet local legislators at the Ames and Story County League of Women Voters Legislative Wake-Ups, and we'll have an opportunity to give them feedback and ask questions about issues that concern you. Legislators will include Senator Jerry Benn, Annette Sweeney, Herman Kornbach, these are state senators, and Representatives David Wessel Crochelle, Ross Wilburn, and Dave Dayo, and Rob Bacon. This will happen on Saturday, March 7th, from 8:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. at Ames City Council Chambers. A great way to start your day. And finally, congratulations to Gilbert Girls Basketball. They will be playing in the state championship on Tuesday, May 3rd. Congratulations, girls. Okay. That was a random selection of the many notices we get here at KHOI, and I hope at least one of these was of interest and of use to you. Now, Digital Dennis, are you there, and are you ready to give your rundown of Iowa news?
Hello again, and thanks for being here on this first Monday in March. There was plenty of news around Iowa last week, much of it involving the coronavirus. A dozen people across the state were being monitored for that virus. No Iowa resident had tested positive for it as of late last week, and the 12 who were being monitored showed no symptoms of it. Meanwhile, a state health official said the risk of getting the coronavirus remained low for Iowa residents. The medical director of the Iowa Department of Public Health said the state had not identified any cases of the disease. There was also word last week that the state of Iowa could now test for the coronavirus. All this coming after U.S. health officials warned that the virus, which is spreading worldwide, could soon become a pandemic. There was also word that the coronavirus outbreak had not yet impacted most Iowa businesses, but the spread of that illness in China has meant longer delays to inspect and ship containers from Chinese ports to the other side of the Pacific and eventually to Iowa. And experts say that could mean that business will slow down at factories here. Meanwhile, Iowa's three major state universities cut off school-sponsored travel to South Korea, which is now the site of the biggest coronavirus outbreak outside China. The University of Iowa, Iowa State University, and the University of Northern Iowa had already canceled travel to China, and they said they were keeping watch on Japan and Italy as well, where the virus is spreading fast. Earlier, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control had advised against any non-essential travel to South Korea. In another major statewide story last week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds said for the first time that an increase in patient deaths at a state-run facility for people with disabilities was one of the reasons she had asked the former director of the Department of Human Services to resign last year. Reynolds said she was not happy with the response she'd received from agency director Jerry Foxhoven about the deaths at the Glenwood Resource Center. That center is under federal investigation over allegations that patients' rights were violated. Meanwhile, last week, word that another top health official in Iowa knew about plans for a sexual preoccupation study at Glenwood well before the federal government started investigating the facility last year. The Des Moines Register reported that newly released emails showed that Rick Schultz, the Mental Health and Disability Services Administrator for the State Department of Human Services, had approved a software request for studies on patients at the Glenwood Center in 2018. The Register reported that those emails show for the first time how far back state officials knew about plans for human experimentation at the center. And late last week, word came that Iowa House lawmakers plan to hold an oversight hearing related to what's been going on at Glenwood. And Governor Reynolds said she would welcome such hearings. And in a related story, the Iowa State Senate unanimously voted to approve Kelly Garcia as the new head of the Department of Human Services. She replaces Jerry Foxhoven. Also last week, new word about what had happened at the Iowa Democratic Party caucuses. You know, the ones that took place 4 weeks ago tonight. A partial recount of 23 caucus precincts showed that Pete Buttigieg had held on to his narrow state delegate lead. The state Democratic Party certified those results this past Saturday, and as a result, Buttigieg will get 14 delegates to the Democratic presidential nominating convention this summer, while Bernie Sanders will get 12. Elizabeth Warren will receive 8 delegates, Joe Biden will get 6, and Amy Klobuchar will receive 1. But the certification vote by the state Democratic Committee was not unanimous. Some members argued that too many questions remain about the accuracy of the caucus counts, and the Associated Press said it would still not declare a winner in the Iowa contest, given what it called remaining concerns about whether the reported results are fully accurate. In other news last week, a jury convicted a man for the murder of a teenaged Iowa girl that took place 41 years ago. Jerry Lynn Burns was found guilty in the 1979 stabbing death of 18-year-old Michelle Martinko in Cedar Rapids. The police chief of Cedar Rapids said that killing had haunted the community for decades. The 66-year-old Burns was arrested 2 years ago on the 39th anniversary of Martinko's death. After listening to nearly 2 weeks of testimony, a jury of 7 women and 5 men returned a guilty verdict after less than 3 hours of deliberations. Meanwhile, in another story, sheriff's deputies in eastern Iowa were speaking out last week against their county attorney because they said he has shamed or blamed victims of sexual abuse. The allegations came against Cedar County Attorney Jeff Renander. There was more last week, including word that Susan Christensen of Harlan was chosen to become the Iowa Supreme Court's next Chief Justice. She becomes the second woman in state history to hold that position. She will succeed the late Chief Justice Mark Cady, who died last November. Previously, Governor Kim Reynolds had chosen Christensen as a Supreme Court Justice in 2008. Now, she will hold the top spot. And there was word that 15 Iowans had applied to fill the spot on the state Supreme Court that soon will be vacated by current acting Chief Justice David Wiggins, who plans to retire this month. The State Judicial Nominating Commission will start interviewing applicants, then submit 3 nominees to Governor Reynolds, who will have 30 days to appoint a new justice. Meanwhile, the head of Iowa's Department of Administrative Services announced that he would resign after less than 1 year on the job. Jim Kurtenbach's resignation will take effect this Friday, March 6th. He said he was proud to have improved the culture of the department. Also last week, Governor Kim Reynolds signed a bill giving Iowa school districts $13 million to address funding inequities. Much of that money will go to districts facing above-average transportation costs. And there was word last week that Polk County supervisors plan to tap Assistant Medical Examiner Joshua Akers to take over for longtime Medical Examiner Gregory Schmunk, who had been fired a few weeks ago. Meanwhile, last week, the long-running saga of the Warren County Courthouse came to an end when the Board of Supervisors unanimously voted to build a new courthouse that will cost about $30 million. Construction will start this summer, with a scheduled completion date 18 months later. The new plan is a trimmed-down version of the original design, which came in $7 million higher than expected. Voters rejected a referendum last year to let the county borrow an additional $3.5 million for the project. Also last week, word that the Des Moines City Council had delayed action on proposed changes to its regulations on short-term rental housing. The council decided the ordinance needed more fine-tuning. This, after council members heard from dozens of speakers about the proposed changes, which included provisions that short-term rental owners would no longer be required to live in the home they rent out. Right now, owners must live in the structure they rent for at least 275 days, which prevents them from owning and leasing multiple properties. Still in Des Moines last week, word that the city is considering asking businesses that are seeking tax incentives to provide housing options if they employ low-income workers. And there was also word that Des Moines officials are putting the finishing touches on plans for how much the city will spend and take in during the upcoming budget year, and that includes deciding the property tax rate that homeowners will pay. In Waterloo last week, word that Deere & Company had announced more layoffs, the fifth round of job cuts at the company's Iowa offices and plants since last November. This time, Deere plans to lay off 42 workers in Waterloo on May 4th. From the nation's capital last week, word that the federal government would reimburse more than $30 million that Iowa's Department of Transportation had spent on emergency road and bridge repairs after the historic Missouri River flooding last year. And there was word that the Pattison Sand Company in Iowa had submitted a new request to the state's environmental agency to export water from Iowa. Now, the company wants to send about 34 million gallons annually to drought-plagued cities out west. In December, the company proposed exporting 2 billion gallons, but state regulators said that would have a negative impact on Iowa's water supply. There was more last week, including word that a Burlington woman and her husband had been arrested in Arizona in what's being called the biggest methamphetamine seizure in that state's history. 52-year-old Julie Jeannie Mason and 38-year-old Marius Montez Mason were stopped by an Arizona state trooper south of Littlefield, Arizona. The trooper deployed a police dog to conduct a search, which yielded 362 pounds of methamphetamine worth more than $4 million. In Sioux City last week, a man who ran a tax return preparation business pleaded guilty to helping file false tax returns. 52-year-old David Miller of Gilmore City also pleaded guilty to receiving government money or property. He's agreed to pay restitution of nearly $157,000 to the Internal Revenue Service. In Iowa City last week, a new investigation had been launched into the Phi Kappa Psi fraternity at the University of Iowa. This after a video on Barstool Sports showed people wearing university logos and Hawkeye yellow and black striped overalls gathering for what appears to be a tailgate party. The camera focuses on young people pouring beer on themselves and doing other things. Phi Kappa Psi members are being investigated for holding an unregistered social event. Last year, that same fraternity was cleared of accusations that it had violated the University of Iowa's alcohol ban. And one more quick note before I go. Word last week that 44% of adults across the nation, and that includes Iowa, of course, say they do no physical activities, nothing at all, to try to keep fit. Of those who do, walking is the most common activity, followed by bicycling and dancing. Health experts recommend that adults get about 150 minutes a week of exercise. And there you have it, my friends, your summary of quite a week of news indeed from all around Iowa. I'm Dennis Hart, walking away quickly now in my effort to stay fit, but planning to dance right back here this coming Friday when I'll have word on what's been making news in Ames. In the meantime, do your best to stay healthy and have a great week.
You broke my heart 'cause I couldn't dance. You didn't even want me around. And now I'm back to let you know I can really shake 'em down.
the Contours with Do You Love Me Now That I Can Dance. And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for joining and listening in. Mary Loxton, who is Manager of Adult Services at Ames Public Library, is here along with Linda Hagedorn, President of the League of Women Voters for Ames and Story County. International Women's Day is coming up in a few days, and it's time to do that again this year. And thank you so much for joining me to spread the news about this wonderful yearly community event. And this is always a time when a lot of groups in Ames come together to collaborate. And Mary, what is the actual day of the event?
It is this Saturday, March 7th, at the Ames Public Library in the Farwell T. Brown Auditorium. So Saturday, March 7th, is when we are celebrating International Women's Day here in Ames.
This weekend.
It is this weekend.
It's always a really, really enjoyable event. Tell us the general idea of what's planned this year.
This year, we will begin at 2 o'clock with, we're thrilled to say that we will have selections from the Iowa State University Theater's Heroic Season of plays, and that's how we will begin the event. We've partnered with Iowa State University Theater to kick off the celebration with live theater. All of the pieces have been written by, choreographed by, directed by women.
And if I remember correctly, they're going to kind of approach it in an interesting way. They're not going to be on a stage. They're going to be mixed in with the audience in different parts of the room?
That's right, because there will be selections from actually from 7 different plays, so there will be different scenes, kind of a potpourri, and the performers will be popping up from different areas, almost like a theater in the round. Our auditorium is very flexible, and for this event, we are going to treat it in that fashion. So it'll be kind of engaging and fun.
So when you're there, it could happen right next to you.
It really could.
Okay, and then tell us about the second half
yes.
of the...
Yes, so after that, we will invite everyone to take a break and visit some of the informational tables from our partners, and then return to a seat within the room and to engage in what we're calling conversation circles that will be hosted by some special guests that we've invited for the afternoon.
Each circle will have a leader
That's
who
correct.
Will lead the conversation. And Linda Hagedorn, you're going to be one of those people. You have been designated as a leader in education.
Yes.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay, so tell us a little bit about what you'll do as a leader.
Sure. Well, we're going to be talking about how education really can be a tool. You know, one of the things that we're trying to do with International Women's Day is to fight gender bias and to look at gender equity in all different aspects. And education, of course, is one of them. And even though women are the majority in college enrollment and women are getting more and more graduate degrees, really the equity still isn't there. And we know of lots of stories where women feel threatened or not as welcomed in higher education specifically. So one of the things that I'm going to be doing is talking about how education can be a tool in equity and how women and girls can use education as a tool for empowerment and as a tool for equity and promotion of themselves. And I'll be telling some stories about myself as well as students that I've worked with. I'm a former faculty member and associate dean at the College of Human Sciences at ISU, and so have lots of stories of how education really has been a tool in empowering women.
Fantastic. So this is going to be very story-oriented, right?
Yes.
And then you will also be inviting people to tell stories of their own?
Absolutely. I mean, we want to hear what barriers have women faced in terms of getting advanced education or post-secondary education or training, and not just degrees and master's or doctoral degrees, but also even just training so that better employment is in their horizons and that they can support their families.
So this, you've been chosen to lead this group because this is something that you have really spent a lifetime being committed to. Are you looking forward to sharing this in a discussion group in this context?
Of course. education has always been my lifelong area of expertise and my lifelong occupational goals. I mean, I've taught in community college and in universities, research universities, and have always had a real zeal for specifically, you know, men and women, but I've always been trying to help other women to accomplish what they can in life. And as I said before, education is really a tool.
So it's really going to be an interesting sharing moment to find out what the other people in your group have to say and share with you. And Linda, I'd like for you in a moment to talk a little bit about the meaning of International Women's Day. But before we do that, Mary, could you tell us what groups are involved?
Yes, I'd be happy to. We've been really fortunate over the years to have community partners join together to bring ideas together to host this really special event. This year is no exception. We have the Ames Story County 19th Amendment Centennial Committee, the Assault Care Center Extending Shelter and Support, that's ACCESS, Iowa State University Library Special Collections and University Archives, KHOI Community Radio, thank you, League of Women Voters of Ames and Story County, Wheatsfield Cooperative, Women's and Gender Studies Program at Iowa State University, and the YWCA Ames Iowa State University, as well as Iowa State Theater. So as you can see, we have community groups as well as university groups coming together all around the concept of celebrating women's accomplishments and fighting those biases and prejudices, as Linda mentioned, sometimes are barriers.
So this has really been how this has been going on for a long time, this collaboration,
it
right?
It has. And actually, I have found records from 2007. You know, we've been doing it continuously since at least 2007, if not a little bit before then, having some kind of annual event to celebrate International Women's Day at the library. Yes.
And not only celebrating, but really using it as a moment for collaboration between a lot of different parts of the community, right?
Yes, that mm-hmm. is absolutely. We've never done it alone. It's always with partners, which is part of the joy of the public library's role in all of this.
Uh-huh. Okay, Linda, tell us a little bit about the bigger picture. What is International Women's Day?
Sure. Although we may think it's new here in the U.S., or at least not as well known, it is widely celebrated in many parts of the world. Actually, it's a major holiday in 25 countries around mm-hmm. the world. You know, there is some controversy about when the first International Women's Day was celebrated. However, there is some agreement that it probably started in 1911 when there was over a million women who have rallied worldwide for conditions for women's lives and in equity for women. The United Nations began celebrating International Women's Day in 1975. And it was in 1977 that the United Nations General Assembly invited member states to proclaim March 8th as the UN Day for Women's Rights and World Peace. So actually, International Women's Day is March 8th. We're celebrating it March 7th at the Ames Library. But the true day is March 8th, which is, of course, a Sunday. I think it's important to kind of see how other countries celebrate International Women's Day. And like many holidays, it can be quite commercialized. In Argentina, men like to buy flowers and gifts for women in their lives. And in many places around the world, it's a day for celebrating fashion shows and maybe focus on shopping and things along those lines. That happens.
Shopping, of course.
Yes, but it also has that serious aspect of equity mm-hmm. for women and women's rights. Last year, I thought this was kind of funny, in China, a group of Chinese men climbed a mountain in dresses and high heels
kind
of show how difficult the hardships of being a woman. So I thought that was kind of funny. But as I said before, many countries do see this as a national holiday. And in China, for instance, women are given a day off from work, sometimes a half day, depending on on their employer. But it's actually a national holiday. And I thought that was interesting that just women get a day off and not necessarily men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, last year in Turkey, there was quite a fuss around International Women's Day. In fact, there was a big rally, and many women were actually even arrested for participating in that rally in Turkey.
Really?
Yeah, because when the when it was time for prayer, mm-hmm. and you know, there was that call for prayer, that's a very loud siren and call that some individuals felt that the women were not giving the call for prayer sufficient attention or sufficient reverence. And so there was some arrests that were actually there. So it's a day of celebration. It's a day for sometimes a little bit of commercialization, a little bit of fun things, but also some very serious events occur around the world.
And it seems that here, the way we've celebrated here in Ames for the last, I don't know, 10 years or almost 15 years now, it's a time of reflection and contemplation of where, kind of taking stock of where we're at as women, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. And actually this year we have an additional opportunity for people to take those reflections and turn it into kind of a collective art piece.
Oh, yes.
During the event, would you like me to mention that's going to be like? So as Linda shared, she will be engaging with individuals at her conversation circle around issues of telling stories about her own experience using education as a tool for her own and other women's empowerment, and then invite individuals to share their stories. And then we will ask everyone to just take a few moments to just, as a group, reflect on some of the themes or phrases or just feelings that they have, having just spent some time speaking with one another about individual experiences. And from that, we hope to just gather the words, jot down some words on a free-form poster board, and collect them at the end of the session. We will have two different conversation circles for everyone who attends, and then consider this a collective free-form poem that we will read aloud and just kind of share some of the things that we've heard and some of the feelings that we have at the end of the event. So that's kind of a nice something tangible to take away as well.
Yeah, that's going to be really fun
creative.
To hear.
Yes.
It's going to be like a collective community poem giving voice to the day, right?
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Yes.
So that'll be fun, and hopefully we'll find somebody who can read it with a lot of drama.
Maybe the theater folks will stick around for that.
Turn it into true art.
Yes.
Mary, thank you, both of you, for coming. Mary, before we go, this might be your last hurrah before retiring. You are planning to leave the Ames after many, many years and really being the face of the Ames Public Library to many of us. You are leaving.
I am. I'm actually retiring in early April. So this is my last March in the role of that I have right now at the Ames Public Library. I've been at the library since 1994 and feel quite fortunate to have been a part of this vital organization for this many years and to have had a chance to work with lovely people in the staff as well as in the community. So it's just been a terrific privilege, really, to work.
Well, I don't quite know how we're going to go on without you.
Well, I think you will be fine. Yes, well, we have wonderful staff at the library. I appreciate that, though.
So talk a little bit about your years of working on the Women's International Day.
Well, over the years, it's just really been quite gratifying because we never know exactly what direction we're going to go. Sometimes we've had more formal panel discussions. Then we've had keynote speakers. In the last few years, we've really focused on having more opportunities for informal conversations so that we can hear the voices within our community. There's always been a period of learning something from others, reflecting individually on your own experience, and really a call to action to walk away with a commitment to make a difference in your own life or the lives of others. So I think those general themes of, you know, learning, sharing, and committing to improvements for our society have always been essential parts of it. And I've just really been thrilled to be able to represent the library all these years.
And it's also been a neighbor-to-neighbor activity. I think, Mary, you and I know each other because of the International Women's Day,
I think
mostly.
Right. Yes, right.
Right.
KHOI came on board, I think, at least 3 years ago, maybe more than that.
More than that, yeah. It's been about 5 years.
It has been about 5 years.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, since we moved into the new, I still refer to it as the new building, so since 2014, probably, 2015. And so, yes, so we've become good neighbors and friends and partners. It's individuals working in organizations who make the difference in our community. And so that's
So do you think you'll be back on International Women's Day in the future?
Well, maybe I'll be back as a participant. Yes, absolutely. I look forward to being a regular library patron for sure. Yes, yes.
So what's your final words on leaving the library? How would you sum up?
Oh, my. Gosh, I'm not quite ready to sum up. I'm still in the wrapping things up and working through my to-do list. Really, I have had a wonderful career at the Ames Public Library. Mm-hmm. This community embraced me when I moved to Ames, and every day I have the opportunity to hopefully extend a welcoming attitude towards everyone who walks through the library's doors. And as I said, I just feel very privileged to have had the opportunity to be a public librarian in the community, in a community that so values its public library. I really feel that 515 Douglas is just the heart of where really positive things are happening in Ames, and yeah, I'm grateful for that.
Well, thank you so much for what you've contributed to making this a better community. I'm speaking with Mary Loxton, Manager of Adult Services at the Ames Public Library. And Mary, one more time, when is the International Women's Day event?
Well, I'm excited to say that I will see you, Ursula, and Linda at the library this Saturday, March 7th at 2 o'clock. At 2 o'clock. And there'll be refreshments, too. We didn't mention that.
Yeah. So theater, discussion, refreshments, good company.
Yes.
See you there on Saturday. And also, Linda Hagedorn has been with me today. She's president of the League of Women Voters for Ames and Story County. Linda, your last words before we head out?
Well, I just want to say that equality and equity is not just a women's issue. And as we celebrate International Women's Day, I think it's important to keep the real goals in mind. And that is that we want gender equal boardrooms, gender equal government, gender equal media coverage, gender equal workplaces. We want to eliminate gender-based wage differentials, gender-based or gender-equal sports coverage, and more gender equity in health and wealth.
Okay. Thank you very much, both of you, for coming. In recent times, the Sunday Des Moines Register, there was a color picture of a rally at the Iowa State Capitol with dozens of South Sudanese Iowans and allies protesting recent violence in South Sudan, a long-disputed region between Sudan and South Sudan. This was an unusual rally, not trying to influence current bills because the Iowa legislature isn't really involved, but attempting to educate Iowans about events that affect their South Sudanese family and friends. Reporter Susan Franson has several South Sudanese friends she met through stories she did for Local Talk here on KHOI and wanted to give them a chance to tell you about their concerns. She spoke with Benjamin Yukalo Luth, who was born in Ames when his family lived in Pamela Court in the 1980s. Here's what he told her about the purpose of the rally and about the people both in Sudan and spread throughout both the Sudanese people, both in Sudan and throughout the world. To give some perspective, the population of South Sudan is about 11 million, which is the number of people in Ohio, but there are almost 40 million, the population of California, dispersed throughout the world. Here's Susan.
What instigates this interview, of course, was the article I saw in the Des Moines Register about the meeting in the State House with big signs. Can you say what it was?
I believe that was a demonstration over some atrocities that occurred in the Abyei region. And I believe that was sometime in the last month that it happened. But it was one of the nomadic Arab tribes came into a South Sudanese village, a Dinka village, and did some horrible things. I believe they killed around 30-something people, women and children included, and abducted a good amount of children. So just a very horrible, horrible atrocity that took place there. Oil is definitely plays a big factor in the current South Sudanese civil war, the issues that are happening in Abyei, the second Sudanese civil war, oil definitely plays a big factor. All these groups that are vying for power want to have control of the oil, because if you have control of the oil, then you have money. and money equals power.
Where is the oil located?
Currently in South Sudan, a lot of the oil is located in Upper Nile. That is a region in South Sudan. And then there's also a lot of oil in Abyei. And Abyei is an administrative area that is kind of in limbo. It's claimed by both South Sudan and Sudan. So Abyei is kind of a weird... It's not really in Sudan, or it's not really in South Sudan. And then there's the main South Sudanese tribe, the Dinka, have a subsection. The Ngok, I believe, that are in their home is in Abyei. And then there's also some Arab tribes that have claim to the land as well. So Abyei is a weird situation. And then all over South Sudan, there's other tribal conflicts as well. It goes on in Upper Nile. There's different tribes that are, same thing happens. Kids get abducted. It even happens in Bahr Ghazal. People with scarce resources or not so many resources going over to the next tribe or community and raiding, stealing, looting, killing, and then taking it back. So it's a problem in South Sudan.
Well, what was the purpose of this demonstration in the capital on Saturday?
I believe the purpose was just to raise awareness about their tribesmen and their people getting killed and the international community. I believe they want the world to see what's happening. I believe the UN is in Abyei, so I think they just want to get the word out there and let people know what's going on. And yeah, it's a horrible thing that happened. So,
a demonstration to just publicizing something is enough, I think.
Yeah. All the war is very little development. Money has definitely always been a problem. There's oil revenue now, but...
But that's causing a different set of problems.
Yeah, oil curse, I would say.
This is an opportunity for you to state a message. Is there anything that you think people should know besides this complex and difficult situation? Is there anything people need to do in America?
Just do your research on South Sudan. It's a very complicated situation there. Yeah, just awareness on, you know, who's affected. I feel like people in the international community are not very educated on the situation. There's so many people that are affected about it. I feel like people try to say that, you know, it's only Dinka and Nuer in that country when there's so many. There's 64 tribes in South Sudan, so there's a lot, you know, a lot of people affected, and everybody's suffering. They just recently signed a peace deal, so hopefully there'll be peace. And it's a beautiful country, so much potential, beautiful people. I think all South Sudanese just need to put all their differences aside, work together. Definitely spread awareness on how beautiful of a country we have, how much potential we have. Yeah, and hopefully things are brighter in the future, and hopefully Abyei, hopefully things there cool down, and hopefully justice is served for those that lost their lives there.
Abyei was really basically just tribesmen. It wasn't an organized party.
That's another thing. Yeah, I believe it was not like government. I believe it's just a tribal thing.
And how do you recommend people find out?
Do your research, and if you have a South Sudanese friend, try to learn about them. Try to learn about all the tribes in South Sudan. It's a very diverse country with lots of different languages, lots of different types of people. So definitely, yeah, do that.
Thank you.
And this is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I'm Ursula Rudenberg, your host for this hour, and that was Benjamin Yokelo Luth telling us the reasons behind the rally at the Iowa State Capitol a couple of weeks ago in protest over the bloody atrocities in Abyei, a border region in South Sudan. You can learn the latest about peace negotiations and other news by Googling South Sudan News. For the last few minutes of the show, we'd like to go back here to local here in the city of Ames. On a monthly basis, we like to check in with the Ames City Council to find out how our community is being organized. Luckily, we live in an area where there is no war going on, that we enjoy peace and prosperity. So feeling gratitude for that. Bronwyn Beatty Hansen, City Councilwoman at Large, thank you for coming in again and giving us an update on what's happening in our city.
Thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
What's been going on for the last few months? The City Council is back in session.
Yeah.
And you have one new member, Rachel Junk, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And you guys are at it again.
Well, it's a new year, and this time of year is always busy for city councils. In January, we had our goal-setting session for the next 2 years. Then also, it's been the season of budgeting, too, so a lot of meetings. We've seen each other a lot these past few months. So, so I could talk a moment about the goal-setting.
That would be great.
We
yeah.
put goals out there for 2 years, but again, things take a long time to achieve, so often goals are farther looking than that. But this year, we did something different. We framed our goals each in terms of a value. So every goal we came up with had to fit under a value that we feel that council espouses too. So
these are the values that the city council holds are important mm-hmm. for leading the city of Ames.
Exactly. One of the first is we value communication and engagement with the public. That value has goals under it that would be related to how we communicate city goings on to the public or how we gather public feedback. We're looking at the app that we use for reporting things, Ames on the Go, decisions like that. About how we communicate using multiple channels for folks who aren't online, say, how do we still make sure that their input is being heard? So that was one of the values. The next value was we value diverse housing options for the community. And under this value, we really talked about how, you know, moving forward in the future, are we going to ensure diverse housing and also housing that's affordable, both technically affordable housing, and then also that sort of missing middle housing that's sort of reasonably priced, but not within the technical category of affordable. So talking about maybe looking at minimum lot sizes, and people talk a lot about things like tiny homes, and those sorts of things are not currently allowed in our zoning codes. And so thinking about ways that we could maybe integrate them to allow for more interesting housing types. So that was one of the values. Another value that we mentioned was having a fun, vibrant community that attracts and retains people. And there's a goal in here, which is kind of an interesting one that I like, is to develop a downtown community space, like a plaza or something downtown. Kind of a fun idea I've heard, and I don't know that it's what we'll go with, but I liked it initially, was that maybe we could have like a small community space that would have like a splash pad in the summer, but in winter maybe could be converted to a little ice rink.
It's a splash pad.
Like a water fountain coming uh-huh. out of the ground for children or adults to play in, I guess. But yeah, in the winter, I like the concept of having some sort of little ice rink downtown would be very cool. I think people would like that. So that was one of the things we're looking into doing.
And where would you put it?
Good question. I'm not entirely sure. You know, my guesses would be maybe that parking lot that's across the way from City Hall perhaps is some space that we have. But that hasn't been decided. I think we're still in the phase of
dreaming.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And then, of course, the indoor pool. We need to look at that, too. Mm-hmm. And that was under that value. After the failed bond referendum for the Healthy Life Center, how are we going to move forward and what scale of facility do people want? So we need to look at that again this year. So that was on there. The next value was that we value a diverse, equitable, and inclusive community. So this had goals such as maybe having council members take bias training, or basically, yeah, how are we ensuring that we're making decisions for everyone? We thought about maybe expanding protections for Ames citizens beyond what the state allows. One of our thoughts here, though, the state's going to preempt us on, I think, too, and that was we were thinking about the possibility of, it's called source of income protection, where someone who owns housing and is, you know, as a rental landlord or something like that, could deny someone housing if they're using a Section 8 voucher to pay for it. And Iowa City did a thing where they said that was not legal, that landlords had to accept payment no matter where it came from. The
Section 8 is public assistance.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Yep. And the state is looking now at saying that cities can't do that. So a lot of things we think to do, the state is already looking to stymie.
The state is saying you can't prevent landlords from refusing Section 8, or the state is saying you can't refuse Section 8?
The state will say you can't prevent landlords from refusing Section 8.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's put a wrinkle in that particular goal that we were looking at. And then the last of the values was that we have value environmental sustainability. And the main goal under here is to develop a climate action plan by the end of 2021. I was excited to see that goal. And that's kind of a good segue, actually, into the budgeting topic, too. in addition to goal setting, doing the budget has been a big part of our time these past 2 months. One of the things, again, that I was excited to see in our budget is funding this year for that, getting the climate action plan going, which I think a lot of people are excited about or feel is valuable. So we'll be moving forward on that soon. And then we had been doing the greenhouse gas inventory, and so we'll get that back and roll that into the climate action plan. So,
and what kind of concrete consequences do you see from the climate action plan? Has it gotten to the point yet where it actually has action points, or is it?
No, we still have to find a consultant. We still have to send out the request for proposals to find someone to work on that climate action plan for us. So It hasn't been developed yet. It's just in the beginning stages. I can guess maybe what some of those things might be, but no, we don't. We haven't heard answers on those.
So it's something that a consultant will be hired to work on with the city.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. Exactly. There are experts out there in developing climate action plans for cities. So
Now, something that I don't think has been discussed here, just kind of by coincidence, but happened in the last session, is that the human trafficking ordinance was passed in Ames, right?
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm. We did pass that. Yeah. Hopefully that puts some controls in place that make it easier for law enforcement to act if there are suspicions of human trafficking. Yeah, we were glad to get that done last session.
So in listening to you, this is what I'm hearing in terms of the priorities in Ames. There's transparency. Ames is attractive. That it's safe. That it is diverse and inclusive. Affordable. And environmentally sustainable.
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Exactly, yes. All good goals, I believe.
Yeah. Okay, any other news that you think is important for folks to know?
Oh, just a couple other tidbits.
Okay.
We'll see work on the Grand Avenue extension this year beginning. People have been a long time waiting for that.
So that's going to start?
Mm-hmm. Yep, so we'll see that beginning. We've talked a lot about 321 State lately and about the housing we're going to put there. Council is considering whether to allow multifamily on that parcel or not. And that's been a big deal to the neighborhood. They, of course, for the most part, the feedback we hear is that they prefer single-family housing there. But it's expensive to do, so that's something we're thinking about, too. And then we're going to start work on flood mitigation on South Duff, where the Squaw Creek crosses under South Duff there. We got a FEMA grant to do that, which is pretty exciting as well. Yeah, those are the main points. It's been a busy 2 months.
Been a busy 2 months, and it sounds like a lot of work is being done. Thank you so much for coming in and giving a report.
Oh, thank you.
And you've been listening to Local Talk. I've been your host, Ursula Rudenberg. Thank you for listening. I'm going to put on our theme song, Backtracking. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here at KHOI. You can also hear us streaming online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard Do You Love Me Now That You Can Dance by The Contours. And Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show, so if you'd like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come and join the Local Talk team. We actually need some reporters. We're kind of short right now. And remember that you, the listener, are what makes K2I meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. Support for KHOI is provided in part by Stevens Auditorium, presenting Waitress, Thursday, March 12th at 7 p.m. Tickets and more information at center.iastate.edu.